12-ounce sports. It's August 5th, 9:01 local time here. Great White North. Cody Jansen with you. Show brought to you by mybookie.ag. Sign up today, mybookie.ag. We got hockey back. That's awesome. I'm not going to complain. It's been full days of hockey. And you know what? We got a good guest here right away. We're going to dive into the broadcast side of things because There's been some questionable choices, but also I think there's been some positives. So please, please, please help me welcome my guest Steve Valansky onto the show. Steve, how is it going on this Wednesday morning?
It's perfect, Cody. Absolutely perfect.
Perfect because there's hockey back, right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. We got a game in an hour. It doesn't get any better than that.
No kidding. No, it's been, how many games have you caught in the past 4 days? Yeah, who's counting at this point anyways?
Yeah,
the only ones that I've really not fully checked out on, but honestly haven't caught as much as I probably should, are the round robin ones. Because those, I don't know, there's not the emotion, there's not the interest that I have in those. But I got to ask you about the broadcast. I mean, yourself, you're all over it. Big Mouth Sports on Twitter is where people can find you. You know what? Hey, you spent some time at a baby blue blazer. I know we talked about that last time as well. But Steve, what have you liked about these broadcasts so far? What's been something that, you know, maybe the NHL, Sportsnet, NBC has changed up and you're like, oh, damn, that's not bad.
Wow, that's a good question. I thought you were going to lead with what haven't I liked, so I was all ready for that one.
That's coming up. That's coming up.
We even fair enough, man. Hey, it's your you do whatever the hell you want. It's your show. When we do our podcast, my partner and I, Paul Hemming,
Inside the Truck, by the way, unreal.
That's right, Inside the Truck. He's the broadcast director for the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolinas. We kick around a lot of things about what we like and what we don't like in these shows. Unfortunately, one of our defaults, I think, as broadcasters is what we don't like. But what I do like, I mean, I absolutely adore the fact that we can watch six games a day. I mean, it's never going to get better than that in our lifetime, my friend. I like, and this is kind of a concept answer, I like when networks and broadcasters and even announcers try new and different things. I think that if you don't keep pushing an envelope, you're never going to get any better. Part of the problem with that, of course, comes when you push the envelope and it doesn't work, you can't keep pushing. And I think that's where they run into trouble.
That's fair. That's fair. Now, let's move along to the more negative side of the broadcast, because for me, and I'm just going to pick out one thing here, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. Why are the crews so thin? Why only like a play-by-play guy and an analyst in, you know, for three games a day? Why wouldn't they do more? Is this a financial thing? Is this a pure, you know, people didn't want to do it? Because for me, that I don't want to say I'm getting tired of, because honestly, I think Chris Cuthbert's a great play-by-play guy. There's no question about it. But we could use a little bit of variety. Am I wrong saying that?
Well, I see what you're saying. So what you're saying is three games come out of Edmonton, you're getting tired of Chris and Louis DeBrusk calling all three games.
Yes. Yeah, I would love to. I would love to see others involved, and I totally get it. You know, you can't get TSN guys. Like, there's so much contractual stuff that none of us have right in front of us. But, you know, I wouldn't mind maybe hearing a different voice, maybe getting a different analyst on here or there. Like, I find the NBC broadcasts have been better from that standpoint, and they've had different color guys, they've had different people between the bench, you know, they've had different play-by-play announcers, things like that.
Right, and you know what? I love variety of reasons. First off, is you only want to bring a certain number of broadcasters into the bubble. And Sportsnet is doing it differently than NBC. Mike Emmerich is calling games from his house in Michigan. A lot of the NBC broadcasters are not in the ring. Sportsnet broadcasters are in the ring. Louis and Chris are in the ring. We see them every game. There's one good thing about a broadcast is that when you've got the guys in the ring, you're going to put them on camera. So the two broadcasters, Sportsnet and NBC, have approached it very differently. Sportsnet clearly only wants to bring a certain number of broadcasters into the bubble. And quite frankly, as the playoffs go along, it's going to augur well for us in Canada because with Chris and Louis in the building, they will glean so much more information than somebody like a Mike Emmerich calling it off tube will. And quite frankly, it's going to be a better game call. So I think in Canada, we're very fortunate that way that we've got Jim Hewson and Craig Simpson in the rink in Toronto, Chris and Louis in the rink in Edmonton.
Okay, that's an interesting point because as you said, you know, they're in there, but I feel like from an analyst perspective, I get it. There's no, you know, anyone between the benches in Edmonton. Rogers Place has its own setup. I just feel like, yeah, I'd rather see more variety, but that's my point. Now let's go to the intermission panels as well. You know, you've done a lot of producing and stuff. Is Sportsnet taking the easy route by having people out of the building? Because when I watch, you know, NBC and they've got their panels in studio, they're physically distanced, they're following all rules and regulations, I find that a lot more, I don't know, engaging. I'll stick to watching it for longer versus watching a glorified Zoom meeting. I don't know, maybe that's me being picky and harsh. What's your thoughts on it?
No, it's not you being picky and harsh, and I think glorified Zoom meeting is probably a really good three-word phrase for it. I would say that Sportsnet's panel, and you used the phrase easy way out. I didn't. But now that you've used it, I really think their intermissions are so lazy. I just can't think of another word for it. It's just, what's the minimum amount of work we can do in 18 minutes to keep the guy from turning the channel? I mean, you know, what plays did you like? Oh, okay, we'll do those two roll-ins. Okay, we'll do these two roll-ins. There are thousands different ways you can entertain me in an intermission. And it makes me sad to think that they've had meetings about this, and this is what they came up with. A quad split and guys sitting on a desk and really not telling us anything that we didn't see over the previous 20 minutes of hockey. I will die without understanding that broadcasting lack of creativity. I will.
It made no sense to me, and I was, I don't know if disappointed is the right word. I feel like, you know, a parent really trying to shame their child here, but I was disappointed to see it. They've got the setup in Toronto. I mean, you know it. I know it. They could easily have people in studio. They could safely physical distance them, and they could put out a much better product. We all know that. And I don't know if it comes down to the analysts they've chosen. I mean, you know, me and Adam have both been pretty vocal on, you know, who we enjoy and who we think is a very questionable choice to be put on a panel of a Stanley Cup playoff intermission. But yet again, from a talent perspective, are you seeing the same thing as us when these people are not as excited for playoff hockey as the average fan? And if I'm watching a broadcast, I want that to, you know, relate to what I'm doing. If it's game one of the Stanley Cup playoff qualifiers, I want the broadcast to have energy through the roof. I want them to emulate what we're feeling in our house when we're watching that game.
Cody, I am not easily stunned by things on television anymore, but when they came on with game one, I was absolutely stunned with the lack of energy that I saw from that studio. I can't even get my head around what they were delivering. Now, I do understand that if you and I were talking face-to-face, we would have a lot more energy than we have over the phone or over a Zoom call. I get that. I understand that. But you are a professional broadcaster.
I knew you'd have something good to say there, because it's that was just one thing that stuck with me, is like, are you kidding me? Like, how is this? I don't know, how is this what got put out? But that's you know, longer debate could be had on that. Is there anything else in the broadcast world that you're picking out as the NHL could do better, or not the NHL, I mean Sportsnet, NBC, whoever's producing it, should do better? I've got one thing in mind, but I want to know from your fact, what's the biggest thing that needs to be, or can be improved, needs to be improved?
Well, my partner, Mr. Hemming, and I kicked this around this week on Inside the Truck, and that JIP camera that's on the track that NBC is hell-bent on using, and Sportsnet is using it too. And it's basically the high shot that looks like cable cam, but it's not. It's on a track that goes back and forth, but it's on a jib, which is a weighted camera that can swing. And I understand that, you know, the NHL says, hey, we've got 32 cameras. I think it would be nice if we used all 32, and this one's really going to be the gem. This one's really going to be the jewel. Well, here's a newsflash for you guys. It's not the gem, and it's not the jewel. If you want to use that jib camera as a replay, if you want to bring that back off tape to analyze from now till kingdom come, go right ahead. That is not a live camera. That camera should never, ever be used live. It can't react fast enough. It's very disorienting. It goes from a play shot, camera two in Canada, camera one in the States, that's the angle we're all used to a toppy shot that includes too many players or not enough players, and it is really disorienting, and quite frankly, I'd be happy if I never saw it again live in a broadcast.
It looks like something they would use for the Bahamas Bowl. Like, it's the, I don't know if I want to call it lazy or not, but it honestly, it's such a joke, because half the time it can't even follow up to the play. It doesn't react fast enough, as you said. It's zoomed out, so you can't even see. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense of why they're so bound on it. And here's my thoughts. I'd love to get your point as well. I mean, from a former player's perspective, I want to see cameras almost behind the net, and I want to see Connor McDavid pick that puck up from behind the net and go on a rush, and I want it to be following him. I want to see what he sees almost. Like, I don't know why a camera like that hasn't been implemented, and it doesn't have to be used live. I mean, that's a perfect replay camera of, let's see what Connor McDavid saw when he picked the puck up behind the net, went 200 feet and roofed one. Like, how is they've got unlimited space to put cameras, Steve. That's my thoughts. Why have we not seen anything other than, you know, one or two new camera angles?
Cody, that's just brilliant, because you took the words right out of my mind, because what I was going to say was, you've played a lot more hockey than I have, and you would look at the game differently than I would. So for me as a television producer to say, this is what we should see, well, that would only be me as a fan and as a TV savvy person giving that information. You, as a player, would look at a game completely different, and you would want to see different things. But what you just talked about with Connor McDavid, that's right. That's absolutely right. There are so many opportunities here to say, look at this player, look at Austin Matthews, look at John Tavares, look at Connor McDavid, look at Leon Draisaitl. Do you know how many different ways we can now analyze guys and isolate guys so that we can show the viewers something different that we can never, ever show on a Stanley Cup playoff game where we don't have these camera angles? And instead, it just seems to be the same old sausage grinder, except for this jib camera, which none of us want to see anyway. And I don't understand that. I don't understand that we haven't sat down and said, look, this is an opportunity that we will never get again. How do we take advantage of it? I think the ball was in their hands, and man, they dropped it and kicked it 50 feet down the road, and they're never going to get it back.
Oh, Steve, we are on the exact same level on that. I got one more for you, and I tweeted it out last night because it irritates me to a certain extent. Why would, and this was a Sportsnet game, I believe, Oh, man, I think it was Vancouver, Minnesota last night. Maybe it was a different one. Whatever, doesn't matter. But, okay, they've obviously, like, they've got the games on delay. That's just, that's normal, I mean, for the NHL. But I believe that they're on a little bit extra or longer delay for these playoffs just because there's no fans and they want to make sure they got everything perfectly right. But, they're, you know, they're bleeping out what they want, and that's fine. But who on earth is deciding to get close-ups every time John Tortorella, Michael Ferland, whoever wants to drop an F-bomb or start going on a tirade, Paul Maurice, doesn't matter. Who's giving Paul Maurice the thumb, or not Paul Maurice, who's giving, you know, the producer, whatever, the thumbs up to use these? Because all along they're like, oh yeah, we don't want to hear what players are saying on the ice, but yet again they think it's acceptable to, like, do that. Like, come on, I either want to hear it or I don't. Like, that's it's not even a tease at this point. It's just irritating. It's like, alrighty, are we going to be authentic or are we just going to, you know, play around and, I don't know, shit or get off the pot if it's me.
I see. So you're saying if we're not going to hear what Tortorella is saying, we don't want to see because we can clearly read his lips. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. That's just one thing that irritates me. It kind of frustrates me in a sense of, like, why are they like, oh, this is what's happening, but we're not going to let you hear it because, you know, we just want to give you the half-ass experience.
Well, they can't, obviously they can't let us hear it because on network television, and they are on a 7-second delay, and rather than muting the profanity, what they're doing is scrubbing it, and we talked about it again on Inside the Truck this week. They're scrubbing the audio, so basically what it's doing is it's scrambling it so it sounds like it's gibberish, but so it's not a straight-up mute. So the question comes, and your point is about, you know, let's say Tortorella yelling at his player and then going back and forth, which they were on the bench, or Paul Maurice being extremely upset about what was happening on the ice with the Jets. It's a real slippery slope, because if you're producing a world feed, which they are doing, which means you have to be equally balanced between showing this team and that team, this team and that team. You can't focus, even though the Leafs are winning the game, you want to show as much Blue Jackets as you can Leafs. So in that situation, I would say you have to show Torts yelling at the guy because that's part of the Blue Jackets story. And even in his post-game comments, he talked about, hey, I'm not even going to break this game down for you guys in the media because it doesn't matter, and we're just going to move on to the next game. So to me, that's all part of his personality. Now, is it frustrating to know that he's saying things that we can't hear? Yeah, it is. And between me and you, Cody, I think 10, 15 years from now, we're going to be able to hear that somehow. I don't know how, but they're going to figure out a way that whether it's a separate channel, whether we pay for it, whatever it is, I don't know. So I think that's a real slippery slope for a broadcaster because it's part of the story of the game. You know, Paul Maurice being really upset about Mark Trifley is a big part of that game. But how do you show that? But you're only showing it in part. And I understand viewers' frustration there as well. I really do.
Now, I might have actually misworded that question because, you know, you hit the nail on the head for most of it. My bigger concern with that, or not concern, but problem, is, you know, Sportsnet using Michael Ferland last night in a 1-2 second highlight package saying fucking bullshit, like, or melting it, right? And so they completely, you know, it's not even necessary, but they're throwing it in there. And that's for me, it's like, oh man, like, you know, why don't we just get a live audio feed? But I totally understand what you're saying. Steve, I appreciate your time. Hey, let's pump up Inside the Truck because I know you got another episode. Oh, is it dropping today, actually? I think it's today or tomorrow, correct?
It's already out there right now, baby.
Oh man.
You can listen to it as soon as you're done.
See, I must have slept in, missed it. No, it's been unreal. You've had some great guests on as well. How much fun has it been podcasting? Like, you and Paul have great chemistry. I don't know how you guys, you know each other really or not, but, like, you know, it's been awesome to listen to and get that behind the scenes perspective, because I feel like for any broadcaster or hockey fan, in general, we don't have that knowledge. So it's been great. What's it been like for you?
It's been an absolute blast. I've been bugging Paul about it for 3 years, and about 2 months ago, he said, hey, let's do it. And I've known Paul since 1985, and when we go for coffee, it's like we just rev it up, you know, like the siren in the rink, and we just go, and the people bringing us coffee will sometimes look at us and go, oh my God, what business are you guys in? You're just talking. we have coffee, just like we've done for 35 years when we just sit down and talk about what's going on in the business. And hopefully the beauty is somebody listening to our Inside the Truck podcast can hear that and learn a little bit about TV as we go along and kind of how it all works.
That's unreal. Steve, I appreciate you taking the time as always. Always great insight. Be sure to go check out the podcast as well, Inside the Truck. It's available pretty much wherever you can get your podcast. Steve, once again, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Cody.
Steve Lansky, you'll follow him on Twitter at Big Mouth Sports. Boy, his stories, unreal. Oh, hit the intro a little bit too early there. I'm sure you probably caught that. Whatever. All right, let's take a quick commercial break coming up. Let's get Adam Ehrmantraut on the line. Talk some NHL playoffs because, hey, 4 days of nonstop action. It has been unreal. All right, we're going to be back after this. Okay, everyone, time to listen up. I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. We have officially found the drink of summer. Refreshingly different Coco Vodka and Rum is the original refreshing mixed drink in a can that combines real natural coconut water from the Philippines, triple distilled vodka or smooth Puerto Rican white rum, and a splash of sparkling water. Coco Vodka and Rum, started by two Canadians with a plan, come up with a healthier summer drink that's made with quality ingredients. Ditch those boring seltzer waters that are full of fake flavors and up your drink game. Talk about a vacation in a can. Coco Vodka and Rum, available at BSW Liquor in Alberta, Edmonton, Calgary, Sherwood Park, all over the map there. And they recently launched in a ton of states down south for our friends down there. You got Michigan now, Connecticut, Maryland, Delaware, Mass, and Maine. Don't forget, you can also enjoy online, enjoycoco.com. Order through there. Enjoy the Coco life with World Hockey Report. Go pick yourself up a case today. Love seeing all the support out there. Unreal stuff. I kid you not. I mean, escape with Coco Vodka and Coco Rum, the original refreshing vacation in a can. Check them out at enjoycoco.com. This stuff is unbelievable. It's going to change your summer and especially how you're drinking that. Alrighty, let's bring on our next guest here. Adam Ehrmantraut. Yes, you know, reoccurring guest of the show. Always great insight. We got to talk about some NHL stuff. This interview is well brought to you by VerberoHockey.com, the best in custom team apparel jerseys. Whatever you want, pro stock, you know, you want to go top of the line, pro jerseys, Verbero's got you. Sublimated, you need something new for your beer league hockey, VerberoHockey.com is going to hook you up. Adam Ehrmantraut, our guest here. Buddy, what is up? How's it going?
Not bad, man. How are you?
Doing good. Keeping alive, enjoying now that we finally have sun outside, able to get on the golf course when I'm not watching hockey, of course. Have you got out on the green swinging the sticks?
Oh, I'm at least like 35 rounds, man.
That's not bad. That's not bad. What's your handicap? What are you shooting right now?
I give myself like probably like a 14 or 15. I think like also the course we play at, it's like the hardest one in the city.
Humble brag.
So, you know, that changes things. But yeah, I'd like to say like 14-ish.
Okay, obviously you're a big member golf guy now. Not a big deal. You know, stepping up in the world, getting those grown-up things done. Is there any hidden gem golf courses in Saskatchewan that people need to check out?
My favorite, like just like if you want like a good course, Waskasoo's up there. We golfed at the Goulet in Regina. I'll give that one a shout out. But for the most part, I think Waskasoo, and then, well, I go to Riverside in Saskatoon, and that's like probably one of the top ones. But
not bad. Not expensive. A bad course.
Yeah, it's all right.
Hey, I mean, golf's an expensive sport in general. That's what is so great about it. But obviously, hey, we've got some hockey going on. So, yeah, had to get you back on to talk about it. Let's start in the West. Hawks Oilers. Man, Hawks came out buzzing. And then they looked like they were 40 years old in game number two. I mean, that was kind of McDavid versus the Hawks in general from my perspective. What did you think was the big difference between game one and two?
Well, I mean, Edmonton decided to play in game two. Like, there was... Game one was one of the worst games I've seen them play all year, and it seemed like in the regular season. Every time they'd lose, they'd come back just like a completely different team. And like it, Mike Smith deserves some of the blame for game one, not all of it, obviously, but I think McDavid heard all the outside noise and he started game two and it was just like, okay, I'm taking over here. And I mean, the depth guys like James Neal, Alex Chiasson, Josh Archibald got moved up the lineup and they actually played really well. Like the top pairing of Klefbom and Larson, I still am not sure really what they're doing, but like I think when your captain starts out like that, then you're ready to go.
You got to follow lead, of course, but man, it got scary for a little bit. Like the Hawks end up tying it up. Yes, I mean, the Oilers come back. They end up winning it pretty handily. From my perspective now, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. If Mike Smith starts game two, is the score, you know, the same, closer? Because I really feel like, and I don't want to give Mike Smith a free pass or anything, but I feel like if he's playing again, he's going to bounce back. But right now, it's Koskinen's net, and Mike Smith probably won't see a game again, and he probably doesn't have much confidence.
No, I agree with that. I think, like, the first game I'm not going to put on him. Like, they allowed 2 2-on-1s in the first minute of the game, honestly, before he even got a shot, or before the McDavid goal in the first game, but yeah, he definitely would bounce back. The issue with him is, like, it seems like the whole year, too, he's either a 960 goalie or he's an 820 goalie, right? Like, and in the playoffs, you can't really take the risk. And I think Koskinen's more likely to just give you 910, 915 consistently. And he was one of the best goalies in the league in January and February. But, you know, I think if you go back to Smith, then you're in trouble somewhere in the series.
Can I say something? I want to, oh man, and I don't want to call out media members. I don't want to sound like the most negative person in the world, but everyone keeps talking about Koskinen's KHL numbers, but they do zero research. There is nothing more frustrating than that. It's an absolute joke. Everyone's like, oh, he had a 950 save percentage in the KHL playoffs. Well, no shit. He's on SKA or SK, whatever, St. Petersburg. Like, they got the best team in the league. It's absolutely rigged for them to go to the finals every year because they're making the most money. You know, they're whatever, government run. Like, I don't know. Like, I think there comes a point in time where we can say, hey, let's drop those and let's stop using that as, like, oh, this is the reason why Koskinen could be one of the best playoff goaltenders in the league, but Dave Tippett doesn't like him. Like, let's pump the brakes there a little bit.
Yeah, I think, I honestly don't think Koskinen's like a bad goalie. Like, he had a pretty good year, obviously a little shaky at times, but the numbers were there at the end. And that's like kind of people bringing up Mike Smith's numbers, how he was like the statistically the best playoff goalie ever, and it's all from the boring Coyotes run in 2012, 8 years ago, right?
Yeah, that's a little whack to me, but I don't know. I haven't looked into it that much. All right, moving along, though. That's enough. Well, I guess we might as well get your prediction. I mean, like, is this over in four? Does it go five? Do you think the Hawks have a chance to steal another?
No, I think Edmonton kind of turned the corner there and realized that it was the playoffs, and I think it's four. It's hard to beat a team like three straight, but, like, Corey Crawford doesn't look right, and like the Hawks are still the team that picked third overall last year. I know they ended up winning the lottery, but the team that sold off at the deadline because they were going to be in a bottom five spot and or a bottom 10 spot, and they're still the 12 seed, right?
Okay, how bad's that Hawks second unit of their power play? It is atrocious.
Like, that's why, like, the kind of top unit stays out for about a minute 45, but, yeah, it's, I don't know who they're rolling out there even.
It was painful to watch. That was tough. Okay, moving along, Jets, Flames. Flames won yesterday. They picked up the big game 3 win. Kind of weird how they made them play, like, back-to-back days. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like just fix the schedule so they play every other day. What's the point in making them play back-to-backs? But, whatever. Nonetheless, Flames win. I guess their Top Guns kind of half-assed showed up. Gaudreau gets an empty netter. But, like, end of the day, Cam Talbot is the reason that this series is 2-1 in favor for the Flames, because I get it. There's no Scheifele. There's no Laine. Like, I mean, the Jets have a million injuries, but the Flames still are not playing good.
No, I agree with that. And I mean, the biggest thing for me was when I picked the Jets in five. It was, okay, Connor Hellebuck will do what Connor Hellebuck did all year, and Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are kind of playoff guys and better than Monahan and Gaudreau. And I was still, like, a little shoddy, like, okay, Winnipeg's second-line center is Cody Eakin, and he was basically picked up for nothing at the deadline. And now it's, like, Andrew Kopp and Cody Eakin and Adam Lowry, which aren't really anybody's top three centers anywhere. But, no, I think the Flames have their power play's been good. Connor Hellebuck hasn't really won the Jets games, which he had to do all year.
Who was Buddy who got a puck in the face there? That was brutal.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, man, he was rocking a cage. Oh, geez, name's slipping past me right now. No, Big D Man, number three. I'm trying to think right now. I'm drawing.
Oh, and Pullman.
Maybe it was, yeah. I think so. He blocked a shot with his face. Hockey guy move. That was unreal. It's been a pretty chippy series. I like seeing it. Honestly, this has been the most fun to watch. Not because, like, hey, I grew up watching the Flames. They were closest to where, like, I grew up. But, like, this feels like the most intense series. To me, at least. And I feel like there's some hard...
Yeah, the Vancouver one's getting there.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Minnesota thinks they're tough for some reason. Well, Vancouver's not that tough either, other than Ferland. Great guy, by the way. And, like, I mean... Yeah, I got to spend a couple weeks with him when I was younger, and he was ripping up the dub. So, like, he was a great guy. Shen was a great guy, and so, like, I know how they respected his teammates, but, like, what are you doing pitchforking a guy on the bench? And if you're one of those clowns who are going, oh, it doesn't happen if he doesn't grab his stick, like, that's the worst excuse ever.
Let go of your stick then and give him a penalty, like, you know?
Yeah, like, That's literally like just saying, like, oh, if someone cuts you off in traffic, you've got free rein to T-bone them at the next intersection. Like, that's just not how it works.
I think like, going back to Calgary for a second, I think for them too, like, Milan Lucic was paid $6 million a year or whatever to maybe put up 40 points in the regular season and then do his thing in the playoffs. And I don't think anybody thought he'd go this south this quickly where it's like, 15 points in the regular season, but he's a playoff guy, and I think him and Tkachuk, like, Tkachuk was asking Wheeler to fight before he even hit Scheifele the other game, and, like, those guys are guys that are going to bring the Flames in it, and they were missing that last year. They obviously got pushed around, and now it's, like, Mangiapane and Bennett and Lucic. They're kind of getting, like, tougher, and, like, there's nobody like Lucic in the league.
Well, Ryan Reeves.
Like, Tom Reeves and Wilson to a point, yeah.
Okay, no, that's totally fair, and, like, I've said it before, Tkachuk stirs the drink for this team. He is the motor, you know.
He's the best player.
100%. They'll go as far as he takes them. And I bring up this question again because it runs through my mind every single time I watch this team. Adam, honestly, and I'm dead serious here, would you trade Johnny Gaudreau for Brady Tkachuk?
Probably, yeah, like, I don't think Ottawa's not accepting that, but, like, why wouldn't you? Like, you'll sacrifice maybe 20 or 30 regular season points, but when you get to the playoffs, like, you got two of those guys on the same team, although that might be getting a little much, though. What, they can barely handle one there.
I would agree with that. I don't know if, like, you think Ottawa's the one turning it down. Okay, well, I don't know. Like, I think if Brady Tkachuk is a heck of a hockey player, I think he'd be great. Also, that Jordan Greenway is just an absolute shit disturber, and I love it. Him and Eric Staal have been the most notable Minnesota Wild, which shows how their roster's looking. Like, that is a depleted team if I've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm. They're Minnesota, right? Like, you don't really look at them and go, like, you're not scared of them. Like, they play a certain way, and I think that Evason came in, and obviously he was an intern, but then he got that Tiger move, so now he's their full-time coach, and seems like the guys really like him there and all that. But, like, they're Minnesota. They're maybe good enough to win around, but it's been like that for how long? 10-15 years?
Has there ever been a coach or a GM with the interim tag who hasn't, like, stuck around? Because I can't think of one. Like, it just seems like the stupidest thing that's, oh, he's our interim coach.
Hitchcock kind of in Edmonton, I guess.
Yeah.
Although that was kind of like he wanted to, like, come home and coach the Oilers, and the Oilers were a joke. Like, Like, it wasn't like
they would have taken the first fan who would stand on the bench.
Yeah, like at that point, it was just like, whatever, we'll let Ken coach the boys for a bit, see what we can do. Like, obviously, it wasn't gonna.
Okay, Canucks and Wild, like, it's a cool series. Do you have anything to throw in here? Because I really don't.
No, I think Vancouver will still win in five. Like, they were terrible in game one. Like, I was listening to Vancouver Radio or something, and they said that the best chances came from Hughes when Stalock robbed him, and then Myers when he shot through a screen. Like, they didn't have any, like, high danger chances at all.
No, it's Vancouver Radio and Media, what a group. I don't know if you follow along on Twitter. Like, literally every single day they're just imploding, trying to fight each other. They act like, oh man, what a childish group. I love it. I mean, that's Twitter drama. Or I'm all here for it. Okay, Yotes and Preds. Darcy Kemper, my man. Like,
he got no help today.
No, I know. But he was good in game one. There's a couple he's going to want back. There's a couple he got pieces of. And, yeah, like, I mean, great student boy. Like, he's got to outplay Saros or Rene. Like, that's a given. But, yeah, like...
I think Nashville is just too underwhelming to win a series.
That's fair. And, like, I feel like they can grind it out. This is definitely a series I see going five.
Yeah, I said Yotes in five.
I don't even remember. God. I got Yotes in five as well. For that one, I had Van in four, Oil in three, Jets in five.
Yeah, I think, like, the Preds, like, they relied so much on Roman Josi this year, and, like, Saros was good today, and, like, I thought he was good in game one. He got pretty unlucky on one or two. I think Arizona just, like, is more dialed in Nashville. Like, Johansson's pretty underwhelming, and Arvidsson and Forsberg haven't really done much this year, and Kyle Turris got traded there and was awful, and they just have made a lot of moves that haven't really worked out.
Okay, let's go over to the East now. Well, Carolina, I had them to win in four. They won in three. That was an absolute walk over. The Rangers are a joke. They don't have, you know, the playoff grit. They've got a couple of decent scores, and that's it. Like, I get it. Shostorkin's
horrible.
Yeah, they were brutal. And if I hear one more person say, oh, well, if Shostorkin was healthy and he would have played the first two games, it's a different story. No, like, your team was trash. The regs were a joke. Like, they didn't want to be here. They can check out after 4 days. Like, give me a break. That's embarrassing. That's exactly what the NHL didn't want to see out of this 24 teams. Like, they looked as disinterested as it gets.
I know. They just, like, Panarin got there and, like, he wasn't the guy who was holding on to the puck and making plays. Like, the amount of, like, blind passes he seemed to throw were, like, where he just, like, spin and fire and hope that the pass would get through. And then Zibanejad is that. I don't know really what his deal was. He was just kind of wheeling around, but, like, Carolina, man, like, they have one of the best lines in the league. Like, their first line's a real first line with Svechnikov, who's, like, already a stud, but, like, going to be a top guy in the league for a long time. Aho, who's 23, and Teravainen, who's, like, 25 or 26. And then on the back end, Slavin got Norris votes this year. Dougie Hamilton still hurt. They got Batten in, And then their goalies, like, I think everybody's like, I'm not sure about the Mrazek-Reimer system, and maybe you still aren't, but, like, they both played pretty well in the three games.
But their style of hockey only goes so far, and that's exactly what was proved last year in playoffs. And I don't mind them as a team. I mean, I'll rip on them because, you know, it's just a silly organization, like hockey, North Carolina, all the stuff they do after the games. Like, it's just an unconventional system with what they do. Also, I mean, they're the biggest joke in the league for getting rid of John Forslund. I'm sorry. But, like, He's the best play-by-play guy in maybe all of the entire states. And they're going to, like, dish him out to save a couple of bucks. Like, Tom Dundon, you cheap prick. Like, he bought it and sold or whatever, a football league.
And the, like, XFL, yeah, or whatever that was.
Yeah, what a joke. I don't know. Yeah. Like, you know, I thought he had a funny interview on Cam and Strick, and so I was like, oh, maybe this guy's not bad. And then he does that. Like, give me a break.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I also think with Carolina, though, like you said, oh, it's the same as last year. But this year, they actually have, like, a little more depth up front, and that hurt them against Boston, where now they got Trocheck, who doesn't look like the 30-whatever goal scorer he was in Florida, but, like, he's still an upgrade over what they had, and that Natchez is a year older, and he's a good player. And I think that they made some good moves. And then Fogle's older, and then they got Morgan Geeky in there too. And I don't know, they surprised me with how good they were. And I know it's just the Rangers, and the Rangers were like an 11 seed, but still.
Like, but like they were like an 11 seed that played terrible. I don't know. I guess we'll see who Carolina faces before I start ripping them once again. Alrighty, Florida, like the any chance of coming back? Like the Isles played exactly how I expected them to play, and Florida just has had no juice. Like they look like they forgot their pre-workout at home, or you know
they've been weird all year.
They're a hot and cold team, of course, but like this is a team who has potential, who has talent, who has, you know, an expensive-ass goaltender in net. They've got good D-men, they've got good forwards, and they've just got a horrible team chemistry.
Yeah, that's what they just, like, Quenneville got there, and him and Trocheck didn't get along, and they traded their second-line center for, like, a third-liner and a fourth-liner, and it was just, like, a weird season for them with everything that went on, and I don't know. And like, you want to talk about a team that style only gets you so far, talk about the Islanders, because you can't win every game 2-0 or 2-1, and like they're good and I respect what they do, but like they'll win a series, but eventually like they'll just get overpowered by somebody. But yeah, Florida was kind of turning into a joke, and the goalie, man, like he played, I don't know how many, like, I follow the Panthers, like, a little bit, just, like, with Barkov being one of my favorites.
You just love Barkov.
Yeah, with him being one of my favorites, but, like...
Like, I'm sure you've got, like, those fathead posters of Barkov in your room right now still. If you could.
No.
You'd have a Barkov sticker in your vehicle. On the bumper. Bumper sticker.
Yeah, I don't think
Barkov's number one fan.
Even. Like, it was, I don't think I could count on my hand the amount of games where I was like, wow, Bobrovsky played well. Like, there's a game late in the year where they lost to Columbus in a shootout that was like a 2-1 game, but like, he did not have a good year, and I don't know what his deal was. And now they're like, they're talking about cutting costs there, where they're like, yeah, I don't think we'll keep Hoffman and Dadonov. It's like, so you're replacing 65 goals with an 890 goalie? Like,
better get ready to draft some good scorers here in the fourth
round. Yeah, they haven't done that in a while.
Okay, moving along. All right, I guess, what percentage would you give Florida to come back here against the Isles? Like, a serious percentage.
Like, I'll give them, like, 15. Like, if Bobrovsky plays like he did in the playoffs last year, sure, and if the Islanders... Because, like, realistically, like, one squeaky goal on Grice or Varlamov, and it's like... You could win that game because, like, the Islanders aren't going to score more than once or twice. Yeah.
I was thinking 10. At first number came to my mind was 5, and I was like, maybe that's a little low. It's only 3 games. It really is. The Isles still aren't a team that like impresses me beyond belief.
No.
But yeah, okay, no, that's fair. Okay, one of the more exciting series, honestly, in the East, Montreal and Pittsburgh. Like, I mean, this was a series where we obviously knew it's Carey Price versus the entire Penguins. And so far, he has made it a series, honestly. You know, I had the Pens winning in 4, and that very well could happen. But, dude, were you surprised that Montreal showed up for Game 1 and took it?
Yeah, like, not... But it's weird with Montreal, too, because we talked about their lack of depth and how they're basically missing an entire first line somewhere. But they're like, Drouin and Max Domi have been terrible, right?
Yeah.
Like they haven't been good. And it's like Nick Suzuki scoring goals. And like
that Kotkaniemi's been good.
Kotkaniemi has been good. And like, he's still like 25 pounds away from being a real impact player. But like, they're going up against Crosby and Malkin, and they just, like, Drouin and Domi have been bad, and obviously Domi got there late for good reason and stuff, but it's just, like, Drouin turns the puck over every time he touches it, basically, and you're just relying on Price and net.
Yeah, sounds like the Montreal Canadiens right there.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh, I think, like, I don't know if they flipped a switch last game, but it's just, like, okay, like, Crosby and Malkin, and then Gensel comes back after he was supposed to be out for the year, and Brian Rust is all of a sudden like a 70-point guy, and Connor Sheary goes from being a fourth liner in Buffalo to riding on Crosby's wing, and he's good.
Matt Murray's shoving it to you. You must hate to see him have success.
It's not like a ton of success. Like, he's been okay. He hasn't been, and after game one, like, I mean, it's not like he played bad. There's just, he's getting his head called for it by some Penguins fans.
Ben's fans are ruthless. Okay, last one I gotta ask you about. Leafs and Columbus. Like, this has been such a boring series. And everyone today, like, I mean, you send out, like, the Kadri and Tavares tweet, and everyone's like, oh, this backfired. It's like, hey, Tavares had one goal in what? It was 3-0 hockey game? Is that worth $11 million? And it wasn't even, like, okay, it wasn't a bad breakaway goal, but, like, it's still a chintzy five-hole breakaway goal. I don't know. Like,
it's a breakaway. Like, anybody could have got a breakaway. Like, it's not like he, like, went out of his way to, like, create something and win them the game.
Yeah, like, if he scores an OT winner, double overtime, like, great individual effort, okay. But, like, Jeff Petrie's goal is a million times more impressive than what John Tavares did.
Tavares just... Look, I've said it for basically ever since the contract was signed. Like, you're spending an extra $6.5 million, I believe, because Kadri was at 4.5. And you're turning, so when Tavares got there, you're turning Kadri, who was a 30-goal guy, into a 17-goal guy. And you don't have a better defense. You don't have anywhere else to put the money. And obviously, like, Kadri did what he did in the playoffs, but at the same time, it's like, he's a very good second-line center behind Matthews.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point. Who do you see winning this one? Like, I picked Leafs in five, but do you see Columbus being able to pull it out? I feel like they have a better chance than I originally gave them, even though I did have this going five. But I really don't hate the way they're playing. They just got to start popping a few in.
Yeah, I'm still going to say Leafs in five. Like, Tortorella just said, the Leafs were good and we sucked today. And, I mean, it was a close game for a large part of it. And look, Columbus, like, you probably heard this today, where, like, Zach Werenski and Seth Jones, like, are probably the best defensive pair in the league, or top three. And, like, both goaltenders are very good. And, like, all it takes is, like, one Freddie Anderson Game 7 performance, which he's had against Boston, to really turn it. And Columbus wants to play a 2-0 game, and if they're getting the saves and if they're locking it down, then who knows? And, like, all it takes is, as you saw in game one, like, one squeaky goal to win you the game. It's not like the Leafs are playing terrible. It's just they had to do a better job getting to the middle of the ice, and Columbus isn't going to allow them.
Okay, now we are going a little bit long, but I got two more questions I wanted to ask you. I just have to get these out there. It's a touchy one, but the Muzzin cross-check by Pierre-Luc Dubois, good friend Ken Campbell, you know, just the best writer in the world, and just loves the World Hockey Report. Okay, he was complaining. He goes, okay, that's all Dubois' fault. Like, if the NHL is to call cross-checking by the rules, like, you know, this wouldn't have happened. I got to get your point because, you know, as a former player, you know, myself too, if they're going to call every single cross-check like that, like, there's going to be, what, 50 penalties a game? It's going to be stupider than it already is. But, like, okay, from your play, walk me through. What do you see on it? Because as I see, it's a fluke incident. Like, he gets cross-checked to the ground, and then he, like, catches an edge and goes, like, flying forward and gets his neck, like, twisted on, I don't know whose leg it was. Like, I really don't feel like the cross-check was the tipping point in that play. But, yeah, I mean, at end of the day, I mean, you can agree with this as well as, like, we hope Muzzin's not seriously hurt. Like, end of the day, you know, you never want to see someone get hurt at all. But to say that this, like, to put this all on Dubois or someone for that incident, I don't know. I think that's unfair.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, like, look, the most, I think you'd say this too, the most dangerous spot in hockey is, like, 5 feet away from the boards, right?
100%. Where Landeskog crushed Buddy the other night on the Blues.
Yeah, like, it's a dangerous spot. And, like, when you're going in there, you're not like, I'm going to push this guy head first in the boards. It's like, I'm going to give him, like, a little push on the pants to maybe, like, make him not turn as sharp so he kind of, like, rides himself, like, into the boards, right? Just to, like, cut him off a bit. And, like, I think that's the style. And Like, we've seen how many, like, little guys get the Johnny Gaudreau slash on the hands and give it a shake and get a call. And even there's a penalty yesterday in the Jets and Flames game where Backlund pushes Lowry in the back. That gives him a little cross-check, and Lowry folds, and it's a penalty. It's like, if you're going to call every one of those, there's going to be 15 power plays per team in the game. Like, nobody's going to play 5-on-5. And even yesterday in the Edmonton game, like, how many of those were actual penalties in the second period? And Connor McDavid, who had a hat trick through the first half of the game, he's played 11 minutes through the first two periods. Like, how does that make any sense? And it's bad for the league because it gets the Stars for the one team off the ice. Like, I guess it's power plays and scoring, but it's like, not every one of those gets to be called, and obviously Dubois didn't mean to do that. It's just, it's an awkward play, like, right? Like, hockey, like, you never know how you're going to fall, and you've seen it before where you just, like, your neck gets kinked up weird, and thankfully it sounds like he's going to be okay, but, like, it's not intentional, and that's what everybody's saying with the Tkachuk one, too. It's like, you're going in there, it happens so fast, you give a guy a little push or a little shot, or, like, your skate bounces up or something, like, it's just going so fast, but that you're not going to slow it down to like a frame by frame thing.
That Tkachuk one was a joke, and it was just a bunch of people that never played the game, like, ripping on it. Like, look at what any former player had said, and like anyone who's actually played the game at a half decent level, like, everyone was on the exact same page with that. So I think
everybody had the same view, but all these like little slashing penalties on the hands, like, look, it hurts to get a slash on the top of your finger, but if you're cutting across and you got slashed on the hands, like, what do you want a guy to do? Like, stick check you? And like, it's, I don't know. It's a hockey play that doesn't need to be called every time, especially if the guy doesn't even lose possession of the puck.
And
like, you're allowed to, like, tap a guy.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like if that's what is setting you off, like, those little slashes or hooks, like, hockey's probably not the sport for you. And, I guess, honestly, I'd rather see them swallow the whistle and call two penalties all game versus, you know, call every single little thing. But there also comes a point in time, hey, if something's egregious, yes, call it by all means. But also, like, it's playoffs. I don't want special teams to determine a playoff game. I want 5-on-5 hockey.
Yeah.
I want it hard. I want it fast. I want guys getting slashed. I want guys getting punched in the face. Like, that's all part of playoffs. Anyone who's played hockey, you know, I it's hard for me to speak, I guess, for a kid nowadays. But, you know, like, you know, when I played, I'm sure even when you played competitive too, like, man, those are the games, like, you know, if you can beat the absolute wheels off of your opponent to help you win. That, you know, that feels so good. That's what hockey's about, right?
Yeah,
so,
like, that's why St. Louis won last. It's not like St. Louis was fighting and being dirty last year. It's just like, you play hard and
you win.
If you play too hard, like, it's gonna get called weird, like, different. It kind of depends.
Yeah, like Ferland pitchforking a bench. You know, that's a little bit too hard. We can tone it back.
Exactly.
That's like, oh, mini on the board there. Okay, last one for you, though. Jeez, we're at over 30 minutes. Not a problem, though. Hey, we'll make time. Adam Ehrmantraut, our guest here. We'll talk your report. The broadcast, Sportsnet, NBC, obviously doing it. We've got these weird new camera angles. We don't have any fans. The announcing has been, you know, well, the announcing. I honestly don't have any real problems with the play-by-play, but, like, it just, there's some of the hosting and stuff that seems...
The Sportsnet broadcast, like, the intermissions.
I don't know, like, there's some of that that they just seem so disinterested. Like, have some emotion, like, that's, I hate that they're at home. I don't get it. Like, here's my COVID rant of the day, and I totally understand, like, this is all valid, but could they not have these people in studio socially distant, or physically distant?
I know, that's what I was thinking too, and it's
what,
like,
a joke.
I love Colby Armstrong. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met, but
Arm,
like,
Dog's a beauty.
He's got a chalkboard behind him that says, like, the game that's on. It's like, it'd look a lot better if you're in the studio and all that. And look, I think it's been pretty good, like, just like with no fans and like the team, like, there's been hits and fights, and like guys are clearly invested. It's just like the hat thing was really stupid yesterday, and McDavid basically said that. The broadcasts have been good, like, I like what they've done with the arena setup and all that. It's just I don't know.
That one camera angle has to go. That's like, that's Thursday night football right there. Like half the play gets cut off. It's all over the map. And I don't know, like it just makes me sick.
And it looks like every shot's going in from over top where it's like, oh, that's, and it misses the net by 20 feet, but you can't tell because you're looking at it from above.
Oh man. Gotta love it. Alrighty, buddy. Hey, I appreciate you jumping on the show. We're going to get you on a well, I guess we still got a few more games. Obviously, if these are going to five, we'll be playing late into the, well, probably next into next weekend. I don't even know. When's the 11th? The 11th is Tuesday. Isn't that when around? Isn't that when actual playoffs start?
I think so. Yeah. So I mean, like a lot of teams are going to be done by the weekend, right?
Okay. I guess. Well, then next week we're going to be breaking down round one of playoffs.
Yeah.
All right, dude. We'll talk to you then.
Awesome. See you, man.
Adam Ehrmantraut, what a great guest there, of course. Hey, we got to wrap this one up quick. MyBookie.ag, use promo code 120ZSports. We also got our Which Nutrition and Performance question of the day. Top goalie in the playoffs, Matt Nafe goes with Corpus Salo, Jay Penders, Freddie, Rick Calder, Freddie as well. Hit us up on Twitter with your thoughts at World Hockey RPT. Hey, we've also got a couple of picks. We got like 30 seconds here. Hey, if you want the realest, transparent, most consistent NHL capper on Twitter, look no further than Philly Pete. Go check him out at The Real Pete Tuck. That's T-U-C-C at the end there. Go hit him up. I got two bets for you today. Let's start off with the late one. Oilers money line plus, or puck line, pardon me, plus 180 there. And as well, it's a round robin game, but I do like Tampa Bay minus 105 on the money line to beat Boston. I don't see Boston having that exactly yet. Alrighty, Pete's Power Plays is up next. I believe he's going to be recapping some hockey from tomorrow. Probably got a bunch more bets for you today. Of course, Pete's Power Plays right here on 12 Ounce Sports. Until next week, take care.